Hi, I'm Casey.
And I'm Joe.
And this is our podcast, Four Letter Town.
A podcast about faith, creativity, and small town life.
Okay, everyone. Well, we're back with the podcast, Four Letter Town. This is Casey.
And I'm Joe.
Today, we're super excited to have our special guest, Cecilia, here. Hi, Cecilia. Go ahead and tell the audience anything about yourself in any way that you've always wanted to introduce yourself.
Wow, that's interesting. Hey, Casey. Hey, Joe. I'm Cecilia Sorocin, born as Sandra Cecilia Sorocin, but I never liked my first name, so I go by Cecilia. So I was born and raised in a suburb of Buenos Aires, Argentina. Always knew I was going to leave Argentina since I was about 10 years old. Ended up in the U.S., now an Argentinian-American citizen, book designer. Found my work love, mom of an almost 10-year-old girl, loving living in small-town Virginia.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So I met Cecilia probably when I was about 10 years old, and her daughter's about 10 years. Yeah, I was like 13 or so. Yeah, in Miami. Yeah. And I always remembered that you were an artist, and you've inspired me to do art myself, and just see that that's a possibility of a way to have a career. And I'm so inspired by your career as a book designer. And I don't know anybody else who does that, but you do a lot of other art as well. So what inspires your art?
Thank you. It's so nice to hear that. So I'd say that there's part of it, you could say art is more like my hobby or something that runs inside, like me and anyone, everybody. I think that art is that thing that moves us to do something. But I wouldn't really call book design art. I'll actually make a big difference between it. I think that art is more self-expression, and that's why that river flowing inside us, the passion, and the thing that we can get lost into, that is our art. However, it will manifest, you know. Maybe for, I don't know, you doing all the work that you do, same for Joe and for myself. I think I really like the, I remember using oil painting for first time. I was like 19, I think. And I remember the very first time I get this brush and I use oil, and I feel the texture of the oil painting against the canvas, and I was like, oh my god, this is so smooth and soft and silk, and it's a paste, and I remember the smell, and I thought, this is the same thing that Picasso felt.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you never put Picasso and me in the same sentence. But
you just did.
But that, and I thought that's the feeling. And I think that at that moment, that's when I thought that art, it wasn't art with like capital letters, that art is this thing, that it doesn't matter whatever comes out of it or the outcome, that the important thing was the process.
And I kind of
became fascinated.
I love that, highlighting the process, because a lot of times you don't know what the finished project will look like. And
yes,
the idea just comes in time.
Yes. Yeah. And also, if you focus on the process rather than in the outcome, you're able to enjoy the journey.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that, enjoying the journey, looking at art as enjoying the journey. That's wonderful. So that's kind of how you say it's different than book designing?
So Well, so art is this self-expression. It's whatever, you know, runs through you and stuff. And then book design or design itself, and in particular book design, is a communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody calls it art, even in my work title, art director. But no, art, I'm not going to express myself in a book or in a book cover or in a design.
Yeah.
Because the best design is the one that is going to show the book and showcase and bring through the message of the book and bring the concept, the book as a concept, as a graphic concept, both in the cover and in the interior. And it's more of a, I think, a good graphic translator. So there is this book, there is this message, and what is the best way that I can translate this message as a graphic form for its audience?
Mm.
Yeah, so I think good book design has nothing to do with self-expression, yeah. But good craft.
Okay, yeah, thanks for clarifying all of that. It's still all very fascinating work, and I hope you have time to do self-expression art at the same time, at times that you're really into your professional work as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm, absolutely. I actually do it all the time, especially since COVID and working at home. I find that I spend a lot of time working on the computer in front of the screen, and when I'm not, my choice is either, I don't know, drawing with chalkboard or painting with acrylic or whatever, or drawing or sketching. I'm doing work with my hands, like exploring outside. The other thing about, I was thinking as we speak, art is not that art, they nourish each other, you know, art and design and the work. I become a better designer when I explore my creativity outside the sign. Mm. When I am able to look at this color palette in the mountains, or when I see the harmony in the environment, or when I get my mind off of everything, and because otherwise it's like you run out of mind space or ideas or something. The more you're away from your work, the more creative you get. Mm. Then you come back in.
Yeah, that's really good. So talking about the environment around us, you have lived in both the big city of Buenos Aires and the countryside in Argentina, but then also now in Virginia. So first, let's ask you some questions about what's the biggest difference between rural and urban life in Argentina?
So where I grew up, so it was outside the city, but I was always fascinated with the city. So, growing up in a suburb in Buenos Aires, so my parents working class, and I always looked at the big city as more educated and more cultivated, with a lot more cultural events, which you do have is fascinating. Yeah, it's incredible. You have like 20 theater options on a Monday night, plus the bookstores open until midnight in the street, and you can go out for a walk in the city at 11 p.m., or you can go out for dinner at 10, and it's fine. That's a normal thing. So when I was old enough to leave my parents' home and got the resources, I moved to the city. I did love the city very much. I love going out for long walks and just sometimes looking at the architecture of the city and meeting with friends at whatever times, bars and cafes open until like the wee hours any night, any Idol Tuesday. But then I, at some point, I wanted to be more in touch with nature, and we decided with my then husband Jeff, your uncle, to move. We wanted to buy a house. It was very hard in the city, and we wanted to be closer to nature. And we found a house in a small rural town, Argentina, in the coast of Buenos Aires. It was very close to the beach. So nature surrounded us, but as it was interesting. First, we loved it. And Jeff had a line that one day he put it this way, and we never thought that it was gonna, that it could be that way, that one could get overwhelmed by nature. Yeah. And I think we were. We were very isolated. So we were both working from home, which now is like everybody's life. Yeah. But there, you know, internet was spotty. Of course, it's a small time, a town. There's very few activities. There is not much social, cultural activity. There's not much to do. So at some point, you have enough. It's enough with nature, I mean, with it. So we moved back to the city. So I think it's interesting, but that's where you see more, I don't know, we have spotty internet, you know, barely. We had to put electricity in the house because there wasn't. So it was a little bit more primitive than we want, and it made it very hard.
Yeah, I remember seeing some of the pictures, though. It was beautiful.
So yes. I'm kind of curious. I want to hear about some of the people, because I got to spend 6 months in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, as a student, and you know the people of Buenos Aires are proudly porteños.
Yes.
And they make a big distinction between themselves and everyone else in the country. Even if it's just people who are just outside the city in the province. I'm curious, did you see differences between the people?
Well, yes, of course. But it's like New Yorkers and Tennesseans.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, or West Virginia and New York City. Yes, it's different. People are different. One thing that I've come to realize between, well, and maybe it happened to you too, right? With your moves, you guys, I know you guys lived in Chicago and Tennessee and now Pennsylvania, right? So when you go and you had experiences in foreign country, so when you go from two very different places, it gives you perspective. And I think what we all have is that I think that we experience the otherness. The moment you are away from where you were raised, you become the other.
Yeah.
By becoming the other, at some point, you can see how everybody sees the other as the different, because, and I don't want to say this word because it could be misinterpreted, but as like country people that think that city people are stupid, and city people think that, I mean, this is in like simple words, right? It's more profound than this, but city people think that country people are stupid. And truth is, each one had their own different needs and developments and lives. Lives are so different that you could not say that one is better than the other, that one is stupider than the other. I think there is a point in which you realize we all have a different set of skills. And yes, of course, people that live in New York City or the city of Buenos Aires are street smart, because you have to check for people around you all the time, make sure no one pickpockets you, and, you know, you grow different. Maybe like living here in Charlottesville, Virginia, I remember a friend going out, we go out for lunch, and she puts her wallet in the table, a panera bread, and I'm like, hey, your wallet, and she's like, oh yeah, so we mark the table, we're gonna sit in. So someone else doesn't take the table. And how many times my car is, right? You would never do that. Almost anywhere.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So I think it's just different.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in the city, you have all these cultural events and cultural life. In the country, I have never in my life seen the Milky Way until I was living in rural coast of Buenos Aires. I had my hand in front of me and I could not see my hand. And I would actually put it on purpose.
Wow.
It was so black in moonless nights, right? And you could see the Milky Way and it was fascinating. So you can't compare. There is no apples to apples. Yeah. So I think it's a good thing, this thing of putting you in perspective, and it's a humbling experience, I would say.
Yeah, and that's why these conversations are so important, and one of the reasons why we do our podcast too, is to just hear these different perspectives and almost challenge that simple narrative. That is true, but like you said, it's more profound that like country people think city people are stupid, city people think country people are stupid. It's a lot more profound than that. Yeah. So thanks for stating that.
It's also really interesting that you mentioned the experience of otherness. Now, you know, you've immigrated to the United States and you've become a citizen. Congratulations. I understand that's quite a process. So I'm curious, what's that been like? This is, you know, not your first time coming to the United States and living here for a while, but what has it been like to live in the United States as an immigrant, especially in the last 4 years that we've had in this country?
Well, it's been an interesting, very, very long process. So first time I came to the U.S. 20 years ago, then went back for youth, back and forth for about 10 years between coming and going. And then last time that I moved, definitely, to U.S. It's going to be 6 years soon. Became a citizen a year ago. So it's been an interesting process. I'm very happy to have become a citizen last year and being able to vote. I felt like I wasn't fully, an American citizen, still, that my life wasn't complete until I was a citizen and able to be part of the decision making. Even though one vote is pretty little, but it is a grain of sand. And I do think that every vote counts. So I'm very happy about that, about being able to be represented in where I have my life and be part of the society in every aspect. So the last 4 years with Donald Trump, it's been scary at times. So before Trump, my citizenship has been about 7-year-long process since I started it until I became a citizen. So at the beginning, I knew it was a matter of time, because I just needed to, you know, wait, and all the steps were gonna go accordingly, and, you know, some things went from one step to the next takes a year, so you just wait your year, you know you're doing the things right, you know you're fine, so it's paperwork, and wait. So you do it. Now with Trump, things have changed. It became more unstable. It felt like you were not sure if the processes were going to continue being what the processes have been before. So every time I would go back home in Argentina, visit my family, and come back, the moment I would step back in, and the immigration officer would tell me, "Welcome home. Welcome back home." Mm-hmm. I would breathe. It still happens every time. Mm-hmm. This deep breath of like relief. Yes, I belong here. And 2 years ago, when President Trump had just put the immigration ban on many countries, and even though Argentina was not among those countries, I had to travel because of my dad's illness, and I was freaking out. Mm-hmm. And I got a bunch of documents, and I was a resident and a lawful resident, permanent residence, and processing my citizenship, but I was not a citizen and I did not have an American passport. And I worked at University of Virginia, and I had to, the university press where I worked, the director talked with the lawyers at the university. They gave me letters that said that I had employment and that I don't know, a lot of things to warranty that I could come back. Mm. So it's been scary. Yeah. I would have hoped it had not been that way. For, you know, lawful residents, hopefully, it would be a normal thing. One should be able to, but you know, there's no shoots, and I don't know. I think anyway, what these last 4 years have brought to light is this profound fear in a lot of Americans. I have firsthand had conversations with people that told me that they do fear immigrants, that they see that they are becoming majority or a lot of them, and that they fear that their children won't have as many job opportunities, and that they will have more difficulties. That the country will be harder to live in, they will have less opportunities to thrive. Honest conversations, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard conversations, so.
Yes, very hard. That's very honest, and I think that needs to be addressed.
Sure.
I think that's the biggest risk of polarization. That the more we don't talk, and the more we're not honest about what the true fears are, it's like the more we're gonna be polarized, and the more we're gonna have more autocratic and more difficult governments. On my point of view, it has been on the Trump administration. Many times during his administration, and especially in the last few months, I saw things that I never thought I would see in American politics. That is, you see things that we've seen in our countries. Corruption, I mean, a politician, a president that puts his family in cabinet positions is unheard of in the U.S. But it's very common practice in developing countries, and countries like Argentina, and we've seen, you know, the problems that brings. It messes up with checks and balances, and then that's not beneficial for the people. That is only beneficial for few ones in power, because the ones in power get more power, and the powerless get less power.
Yeah.
Yeah, thinking also about, you know, some of the polarization that you've experienced and the hard conversations you've had. I kind of want to talk a little bit about race, because a lot of time, in the United States, so much of politics and everything is racialized in the United States, particularly in the American South. But having lived in Argentina, race works a little bit differently there. You've lived in both places. I'm curious how you tend to identify racially. And I'm curious, what are some of the similarities and differences between, like, race in Argentina versus race in the United States?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. It's just so funny. In my case, in the U.S., it's so hard, right? Because I was born and raised in Argentina, but my parents are not Argentinian. My mother was Italian. My father, Russian Jew, born in Paraguay. So I'm like, what do you say? Italian-ish Argentinian / Russian? No, it's just it doesn't play that way. It's like this kind of mix of things. So here is weird, because I identify as Hispanic, but I guess Hispanic white when I need to check the boxes. You cannot see me, but I'm like really pale. I'm fluorescent in the dark, pretty much, because of I have the skin color of my father, who's Russian Jew. So nothing to do about that. But at the same time, I'm Hispanic. So for some people, I recently was invited to a forum that is BIPOC in publishing, and they call me people of color. So I feel like I'm fake, or I'm an intruder, and someone called me brown. And it's weird, right?
Because they would, in Buenos Aires, you would always be Blanca, J Blanca, or something like that. And yeah, I get it.
I know. And also, for anybody that has learned my accent, they see me without speaking and they wouldn't think I'm anything other than what people identify in this country as just white, plain white, wonder bread. So I find it just really, really weird and very hard to put an exact label, because you can not really coded. And I think if I wish we would stop coding each other, like put the exact barcode that each one of us has to have. I always thought of everybody as like, okay, I'm an immigrant minority, right? Other people are, well, I think we're all part of minorities in different cases. Other people are, I don't know, a gay minority, or other people are a different kind of gender or sexual orientation minority. Other people are a different skin color minority, and other people are, I don't know, widows minorities. So I think what we identify with is just, there are so many aspects of our lives that can become the primary identifier or not. And I personally don't think my skin color is my primary identifier. I think I want to think of myself of like an explorer of the world, or a curious person, book lover, life lover, would identify me as a lot more as who I am than where I come from or the color of my skin or like, you know. Yeah, I don't know. I think we need a lot of conversations.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to go on from that, you live in Charlottesville, Virginia, which, while I personally have never been to Charlottesville, but I've heard that it's this lovely, kind of almost like a bastion of progressive thought in the middle of kind of Southern Virginia there. And yet most people, at least since 2017, when they hear Charlottesville, they think of that rally back in, what was that, August of 2017. You were there.
Yes.
What was that like?
Well, first, you guys should come to Charlottesville.
Yeah, well, we were going to do a half marathon there, but then, you know, COVID and all that.
Wonderful.
It looked like a beautiful route. So, we'll come one day.
Yeah. Okay.
We've been very close. We've like driven past it, but just haven't stopped.
Yes, looking forward. Yes, that was just absolutely crazy. And what you say is true. It feels like that. People are very. This is a very progressive town. I think thanks to University of Virginia, that brings a lot of people from everywhere. Yeah, it feels lovely. There's a lot of life going on here, and at the same time, yes, it does feel with this old-timey classic something. And also remember that I see it from Argentinian perspective. So I, even though I know the whole South and Virginia, the old South and stuff and history and everything that comes with it, at the same time, I don't have the perspective of someone that grew up here. Mm-hmm. So that's different. So what I can tell is just what I can perceive from this one person perspective. So I'm loving it here. I thought it was like, yes, absolutely progressive, and never thought about anything racist. And I personally, as an immigrant, never experienced anything other than welcoming love. And felt always part of it, like home. I always felt like home here. And at work, I always felt like home. I mean, I have no problem in, you know, talking with a few with some accent, and I know I modify a few words, and we could joke about it, and we're fine, right? And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. At work, I never felt that there was a difference between anyone else that wasn't, or anyone that was different, for any other reason, not just immigrants, skin color, gender, whatever. But also, I think that's all academia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Open and
which is a box of its own in the world.
Yeah.
Too.
Exactly. So being here a month before in August 11, 2017. A month before that, there was another rally where I went. It was more local, and there were the white supremacists with the hoods and the all the signs that said Jews would not replace us, some biblical passages, and they were dressed, and they marched around the courthouse. And so I went there as a counter protester, like everybody else, you know, just to go there instead, because that I thought it was ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
and almost like out of a movie.
Yeah,
it was completely surreal. I thought, these people out in the open with hoods, what? And it was almost like a spectacle, a sideshow, right? Crazy. And I thought, these are just a couple crazy cuts. But then, so I went there, I saw a lot of people there. It was really nice to be there. Like these few crazy ones, they should not. They're not welcome here or anywhere. Like, you're a clown and go back in the cave. But then, I've been to many protests in Argentina because that's very common, and there's, you know, it's like you go because that's part of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't necessarily need to be like a radicalized or activist or anything. You just, you know, it's normal to go here and there. And I was in education there too. So when I was teaching at design school there, I'll go do some protest in front of, I don't know, the Ministry of Education and things like that. So felt normal. So when August happened, I was gonna go, but then I had my daughter Mila with me that weekend, and we had gotten word that it was not okay. It was not gonna be okay, and that it could be violent, and that people could have weapons, and it wasn't just like the month ago that this could go wrong. And so I thought, that's weird. So at the time I got this, I was like, this is like completely ridiculous. And I got a sign for my front yard, something about love is love, and we welcome all our neighbors, and
yeah, we have that sign.
And I remember that day, I thought, should I take out my sign? And it was for the first time that I decided not to go to a protest because I felt scared. It felt unsafe. And I was very close to McIntyre Park, and a neighbor posted in Facebook at the time. I quit Facebook, by the way, but I was at the time. because there is a car without license plate that is shooting. So, and it was close to us. This is the car. And I was, okay. So for first time, I actually felt scared. And I thought about taking out the sign. I told Mira, let's go outside the windows. You know, just, and it was a terrifying experience because later that day, a helicopter crashed that day at noon. Helicopter crashed, the car was out shooting, then the protesters ran over this woman, and it was just horrible. The next day I went there to the mass, not a mass, a prayer, singing and stuff. Yeah, and I think we were all shaken by it. As a community, I think, so the next day and the following weeks, you'd start seeing most of the shops would have, in the downtown mall, would have the sign about something along the lines of, if you come here, you're an accepted person, and we accept everybody, and you're not a racist kind of place. The following weekend, I got together with a very dear friend who is Black, and she was shocked by it. And we were all shocked by it. We're still in shock. And we decided to go out and to go out for drinks. And we said, we're going to go. And we're going to have a drink in different places. But we're only going to go to the ones that have the sign.
Yeah.
If they don't have the sign that they're accepting of everybody, we're not going to go in. So we did that, and we talked, and we cried, and we drank, and we had a lot of skinny margaritas and more. And it was somewhat cathartic. And after that, I've seen a lot done by the university, a lot to recognize race. Yes. The University of Virginia, we as the University of Virginia Press, where I work, we have published many, are at least changed to at least 50% to race. Studies on race. And looking at what happened. And even recognizing, you know, the people that were enslaved and built the university, leaving a monument. And I think there are a lot of opportunities and new opportunities for people that are minorities, more and more. And I think a lot is being done. But, you know, that's my perspective of my eyes, you know, other people.
Yeah.
I always want to emphasize, this is my point of view only.
Yeah.
It's not the truth.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's only the truth through my own eyes.
Thanks for sharing your point of view. It's like, all of this is hard to talk about.
Yeah.
You covered a lot of really hard things from your point of view. And I appreciate learning from you and the work that you're doing on the campus as well. And when you were talking about the signs, the welcome signs of we welcome all people, that just reminded me the importance of having something as simple as a sign like that for representation. And yeah, we have one of those welcome signs outside our house too. And I haven't been scared to take it down, but I was a little nervous to put it up at the beginning because I don't know. We just moved to our town. I don't know the demographics as well or the politics as well. So I was a little scared to put it up. But I do also know it's important to have it there as well to show the welcomeness that we can offer.
Yeah. You know, there's something about it. I was thinking what times we live in that having to state it, and second, having a sign like that is already an indicator. It puts you in a box.
Yes.
And that to me is a little annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it keeps polarized. Even the sign, which I think it was a positive thing, and I wanted to say it, and I felt compelled to put it. Same as I felt compelled to go to the protest.
Yeah.
Against white supremacy. But that it bugs me that puts me in another box.
I agree, yeah. I know the importance of it because how have we come to a world where actually for safety, in a way, we have to have the boxes for some people, I guess. I guess I'm still struggling with that as well.
Yeah.
But, like, our town is, our town, our county voted 75% or more for Trump, right?
Yeah.
There's Confederate flags and what Trump stands for. I would say, let's just say definitely a person of color, a black person with the history of the United States is not, I almost feel scared to invite my black friends to come stay with me and have them walk around this town by themselves. Cause I'm like, so maybe a sign that says like, we don't tolerate racism or Black Lives Matter actually will help them feel safe here. And so if there's some of that here, I would be like, okay, maybe I could invite them here, but that's not here. But yeah. But I don't know. But yeah. So some of that is important for the U.S. But I hate that we're at the point that we have to put the boxes up for people. I don't want that. We shouldn't have to be that. We should just be good humans.
Exactly. And we shouldn't say that the color of your shouldn't put a sign in front of my house that says the color of your skin doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Or Black Lives Matter. Polarization and putting boxes and against each other.
Yeah. Did you see boxes like that when you in Argentina, growing up in Argentina, people were putting boxes as much as they are in the U.S.?
Yes, it is different though. Okay. Argentina, yeah, it's very racist,
mm-hmm.
but you don't see it like here. So it is completely xenophobic. I think xenophobia is like a epidemic everywhere. But it's different. There is like it's totally accepted and people think that they are not. This is the I don't wanna say funny, but it's kinda it's so ridiculous. It's almost it doesn't make any sense. So in Argentina you don't have people of black race. What you do have is people of European descent which are white skin color, and you have people of Aboriginal descent that are brown. So many times people that are white call the brown people black.
Yeah, places maybe Paraguay, but when I was there, it was especially people were always really concerned about like Bolivians and Peruanos, people from Peru coming to Argentina, and yeah, that's how they would refer to them. Those would be the Negros in Buenos Aires, which really threw me for a loop. I didn't know how to respond to that.
It is very. Xenophobia is a very serious problem. Xenophobia is completely accepted in Argentina. as a normal fact of life, and color of the skin is mixed in with it, and it's very sad. This, I don't know cases of like upward mobility for immigrants in Argentina. They don't have representation. They don't have possibilities, opportunities. No, it's not seen. They think it's not, and this is the funny, the word I was referring to, funny, is not really funny, but it's the ridiculous part of it is that Argentinians think that because they're not of black race, when they call them black, they are not discriminating against race. So they are not being racist, which is like, it's completely mind-blowing. It makes no sense. But it's like widespread discrimination, and there is a lot of discrimination against, I don't know, people that are overweight. Yeah, it's very common.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it's a shame, and it's a very difficult, it's a more difficult conversation there, I think, because it's not being even explored.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Interesting.
I think that here people have, what we see more manifestations, and more like we see white supremacy here because we get to have a black president, right? There's never going to be that chance in Argentina. You're not going to have a president of color. So.
Thank you so much for having this really deep, important conversation with us. And I hope all of our listeners can continue having deep conversations about these topics as well. I enjoy hearing your point of view, Cecilia, and I've definitely learned a lot. Thank you.